Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. At this time, we would like to welcome everyone to Raia Drogasil conference call to discuss the second quarter of 2016 results. The audio for this conference is being broadcast simultaneously through the internet in the website www.raiadrogasil.com.br/ir. In that address, you can also find the slideshow presentation available for download. We inform that all participants will be able to listen to the conference during the company's presentation. After the company's remarks are over, there will be a Q&A period. At the time, further instructions will be given. Should any participant need assistance during this conference, please press star zero for an operator. Before proceeding, let me mention the forward-looking statements are being made under the safe harbor of the Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1996. Forward-looking statements are based on the beliefs and assumptions of Raia Drogasil management and on information currently available to the company. Forward-looking statements are not guarantees of performance. They involve risks, uncertainties, and assumptions because they relate to future events and therefore depend on circumstances that may or may not occur in the future. Investors should understand that general economic conditions, industry conditions, and other operation factors could also affect the future results of Raia Drogasil and could cause results to differ materially from those expressed in such forward-looking statements. Today with us are Mr. Marcílio Pousada, CEO, Mr. Eugênio de Zagottis, Investor Relations and Corporate Planning Vice President, and Gabriel Rosenberg, IR and Corporate Planning Director. Now, I will turn the conference over to Mr. Marcílio Pousada. Sir, you may begin your conference.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the presentation of the results of the second quarter 2016 of the Raia Drogasil. As always, Eugênio will present the slides with the results, and after that, I'll talk some to us about the results also. Eugênio, please.
Okay. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the second quarter 2016 earnings conference. It's with great pleasure that we present record results for the company. This was the best quarter ever since 2007, when Drogasil became a public company. We ended the quarter with 1,330 stores in operation. We opened 58 stores and closed two stores during the quarter. We reached gross revenues of 2.9 billion, 26% of growth, and 14.5% same-store sales growth at the retail level. Our gross margin reached 31.6%, a 1.3 percentage point increase. Our EBITDA reached 305 million reais. This was a margin of 10.4% and 100 basis points margin increase. We posted adjusted net income of 168 million, 5.7% net margin, and an increase of nearly 41%. We presented a negative cash flow of 1.6 million for the free cash flow and 80 million for the total cash flow. Finally, we increased our store opening guidance for 200 stores, both for this year and for next year. On the next page, talking about our store development program. As I mentioned, we reached 1,330 stores in the quarter. We opened 58 stores and closed two stores. Year to date, we have already opened 97 stores. Pretty much half of the year's program is already delivered. When you look back to the last 12 months, we have opened a total of 196 stores. The point here is we have been able not only to accelerate our store openings, but also to better balance it through the year. The 200 stores that we are promising is no different from what we have been already doing over the last 12 months. Another thing to mention is that the quality of the new stores we have opened in the last 12 months, and we have been tracking that very closely, has been outstanding. These stores are posting higher revenues than expected, and as a result, they will deliver higher internal rate of returns than the one we assumed when we signed the contract. All of this gave us the confidence to boost our earnings guidance, and the idea now is really to do 200 stores a year. That's certainly the number for this year. Don't expect any more stores than that. We believe we should do that again next year. In terms of the store portfolio, 34% of the stores at the end of the quarter were already were still in maturation. This is one of the, I think, the largest number since 2013. But if you look only at the year one stores, the greenest part of the portfolio, we have 15% of stores within year one. So this is the youngest portfolio in the history of the merged company, without any shadows of doubt. Page five, talking about our geographic presence. I mean, we of the 1327 Raia Drogasil stores, 642 were Raia, 685 were Drogasil, including here 20 pharmacy stores. We ended the quarter with 779 stores in São Paulo. This is an amazing presence, and the best thing is that we keep seeing more and more opportunity to increase this figure. We have already 79 stores in the Northeast. This is an amazing success story. And now, with a DC just open nearby Recife, we are very eager to keep pushing the Northeast. And another important thing here is that by the end of this month, we'll be entering another new market, which is the state of Tocantins, in the northern part of Brazil. So when you look in the chart, you have DF and GO, Distrito Federal and Goiânia. Tocantins is the state just on top of it. It's a small state, but I think it's another step for the company towards building a bigger share in the Brazilian market. And talking about share, we grew it in a very meaningful way during the quarter. We reached 11.5% of market share, 1.6 percentage point increase. I'm talking here comparable market share, the one that excludes stores added to the base recently, so it's a comparable figure. São Paulo, we increased 1.9 percentage points to 23.5, and the Northeast, we increased 2.1 to 3.9%. In all the other markets, we have also increased our market share to 7.4 in the Southeast, to 14.4 in the Midwest, to 5.9 in the South. On page 6, we posted consolidated gross revenue growth of 26%. Raia Drogasil delivered 24.5% revenue growth in the retail level, while 4Bio posted amazing 113% growth, more than doubling the size of its operation since same quarter last year. When we analyze the sales mix, we have increased hygiene personal care 0.2 percentage point and decreased generic by 0.3 percentage point. It's important to mention here that the sales tax for generics was reduced from 18% to 12% in the end of the first quarter. And this caused a price reduction in generics that is very good because it maintains our gross profit. But when you look at the revenue share within our sales mix, obviously it affects, and generics has fallen 30 base points. But the important thing is that on a unit basis, generics is doing very well. And I was just mentioning 4Bio. I think this number, it shows, I mean, how correct our strategy was to buy the company. Another thing is that this was an acquisition in which we didn't find any negative surprises. We didn't find any bad contingencies. We didn't find any bad practices. Everything that we expected happened, and that's not usual in an acquisition. So the point here is the quality of the company we bought, the quality of the founding shareholder who is now our partner, who's now the executive, still leading 4Bio. I mean, I think this speaks then about that. And Raia Drogasil has been able to help 4Bio financially by strengthening the capital structure. We have been able to restore supplier credit and to open doors to new suppliers and to new products, and this has allowed 4Bio to fulfill its full potential. 4Bio is benefiting tremendously from new product launches like Sovaldi, the blockbuster hepatitis C drug that was launched this year. 4Bio is strengthening its presence with payers in Brazil, in a market structure that resembles the managed care market in the U.S. So here, the bulk of our buyer sales is to health insurers who are really payers. This is a service-based company, the value management. So it's very, very much the same trends you look in the U.S. in a company like Diplomat or even with CVS, Express Scripts, and Walgreens, for example, who have this business unit as well. Next page, talking about same-store sales. The total revenue growth for the quarter was almost identical to the previous quarter, 26.1 versus 26.3. When we compare same-store sales and mature store sales growth, it was a very good number, but slightly below the previous quarter. And let's remember that the first quarter saw a lot of non-recurring seasonal effects, things like surge in H1N1 and early flu season. So there were a lot of seasonal effects that obviously didn't repeat themselves now. But it's a very good number. It's interesting that, as I mentioned, it's a smaller number in the same-store sales level, but it's the same number on the total sales level. And that's because we have opened way more stores in the first semester this year versus last year. And these stores, they only figure in the consolidated revenue growth. For bios, growth also helps the figure to be similar to the previous quarters. All these figures here are impacted by a positive calendar effect of 0.9% in the quarter. On page 8, our gross margin reached 31.6%, a 130 basis point increase on the back of inflationary gains. So the prices went up by 12%, and we were able to build a very sizable forward buying. So our inventory was very high, so we benefited tremendously from this price increase. So this was a very meaningful boost for our figures. We also have here a negative 4Bio mix effect of 20 basis points. 4Bio has lower gross margin, so its growth penalizes the overall gross margin. Here on the right, our cash cycle increased by 2 days, driven by a 4-day inventory increase. We have here a combination of factors which are transitory effects. First is we still have some inventories from the forward buying. So inventory is higher because of that. Second, as we opened a new DC in the Northeast, this new DC also provided us light pressure for the cash cycle. And third, we bought so much products in the previous quarter in terms of insect repellents during the Zika and dengue crisis that we have now very big inventories, and this inventory should fade away as well. So nothing to worry about, but there's a slight cash pressure in the quarter arising from 2 days more of cash cycle. Page 9, talking about expenses. Total expenses were 21.2% of revenues, 30 basis points higher than the 2Q15, second Q15, but absolutely in line with the previous quarter. So total expenses have been flat since the third Q15. The main pressures we saw in the quarter were on marketing expenses, 20 basis points, and this is a choice. So we are reinvesting part of our gains. Also, 20 basis points in asset write-offs. We have already written off 9 stores in the quarter that should be closed in the next quarter or two, versus only 4 or 5 stores last year, the same quarter. So that's a 20 basis pressure. And then 10 basis pressure in logistics from the new DC, 10 basis in labor, 10 basis in energy, and 10 basis in new store pressure. The new store pressure has been smaller than we anticipated, because the quality of the program has been better than we expected. To an extent, as we see, the EBITDA increased 39% to 305 million reais in the quarter, 100 basis points EBITDA margin increase. If we consider only the 1,235 stores that we had in the end of last year, and fully attributing to those stores the administrative expenses and logistic expenses, we would have had an EBITDA margin of 11.1%. So the EBITDA would increase from 305 to 317. So we have here 12 million reais, roughly 12 million reais, in new store pressure for the stores we opened in the last 6 months, and preparation expenses of the stores which we are preparing to open. Looking only high at Drogasil, only the retail level, we reached an EBITDA of 10.5% and an EBIT of 8.2%. For Bio, we reached an EBITDA of 7.5 million. This is higher than last year's EBITDA. So in one quarter, we did more than we did the full year of 2015. The margin was 8.4%, and the EBIT was 8.3%, 10 dips higher than Hydrogazil. It's important to mention here that because 4Bio has much smaller inventories, and because physically those inventories, in terms of unit, they are much, much smaller since they have very high prices, we have been able to double 4Bio's inventories during the fall buying. So the inflationary gain effect here is completely disproportional. As a lower margin business, 4Bio has always to leverage buy opportunities whenever they present themselves. It could be forward buying before the price increase. It can be sometimes opportunity buys. It has a disproportional importance of 4Bio when compared to our traditional business. Page 11, our net income reached adjusted net income, 168 million reais, 40.6% increase, and a 60 basis points margin increase. This margin increase arises from an EBITDA growth, an EBITDA margin increase of 100 bps, less income tax increase of 40 bps due to the higher profitability. The reported net income reached 157 million, 44.6% growth over the previous year. The only difference between the two is that we have been adjusting the goodwill amortization, which is a cash effect that doesn't show in the reported net income, only in the adjusted net income. Page 12, cash flows. We had a slight negative cash flow of 1.6 million in the quarter, and a negative total cash flow of 80 million in the quarter. This is higher than last year, in spite of bigger resources from operation figure. The main reasons here are, first, higher investments. That's the good part. Investments increased from 81 to 112. As not only we are opening more stores this year, but we are opening them much earlier. In this first quarter, it's a bigger difference. But the main effect here was really the cash cycle. Obviously, last year was a very low figure as we had reduced cash cycle. And after 3 years of cash cycle reductions, we can no longer expect to keep reducing cash cycle every year. So just the normalization of the working capital, just by maintaining the flat cash cycle, there will be a much, much bigger working capital investment. With the increased 2 days in cycle, this is even bigger. But this part is transitory. But the point here is that even without this transitory part, from now on, the cash cycle burden, the working capital burden, sorry, will be bigger than in the past. Finally, talking about our share, we generated year-to-date a shareholder return of 78%, with considering the average annual return since Drogasil's IPO, we have reached an annual return of 30.8%, and since 2007, so very high number for a very long time, and 38% for whoever invested in Raya's IPO since 2010. I mean, these are big numbers and much bigger than what private equity, for example, generates. So I'll now pass to Marcilio, and then we'll be back to Q&A. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Eugenio. I think in the slide 14, I show how we work with this inflation management, how it's difficult to work with inflation in Brazil. We know that this price increase we have every year, then we work very, very strongly with every team here, try to increase the inventory and try to keep all the operations the same level before the increase the price. Okay, this helped us a lot in all the results of the year, but help us in this record results in this quarter. What happened with the customer, which is this high price? We had a big change in the mix. You know that the customer starts to buy more branded, low branded drugs, and also more generics also. This shows us a negative 2% in order mix effect. And the inflation gains also helped the competition. Then we know that more war in price in some markets, and work better in this one also. And all the dynam that work with us will help us to pass for this point right now. What's important here? We work only for the long term. We know the keep the market share is very important for us. Then we make all the execution, which is high inflation, to help us to keep this market share and gain some market share after this high in prices, okay? In the next page, I show how we work with the guidance for 200 stores in 2016 and 2017. We had a problem here in the past. We know that we open stores just in November and December, a big amount of stores every year. We know this is a mistake for our business, and it's a mistake for our process, okay? We understand how we need to change this, and we work very, very strong to increase the contract pool since 2015. We work also understand better all the process to obtain the license to open the stores, and work very, very closely with the state house all the process in which human research department, how to hire, train, prepare the people to serve the customer and open. Then we change the store guarantee for 200 stores per year this year and the next year. Better than 200 stores, we are planning to open 10 to 20 stores per month. We are looking for stabilizing this process for the future. The good news here that the store is still open with outstanding performance, and we're looking only for corners with high inventory in the stores, and the people ready for the service the customer in the stores. Then what are happening, what are doing right now, what are our agenda right now to in this inflation environment in Brazil also. If you look at all the CEO retailers in Brazil, I think the people are looking sales, expense, and talk with the banks. As we have a very deficit market here in Brazil, we're not looking a lot for the sales and for the banks, but you have to look very, very strong with the expenses. We have four good initiatives to help us expense for the future. The first one is the labor. We're reducing turnover, and we are optimizing our staffing also to help to reduce the cost in the labor for our company. We're looking for the rentals. We negotiate the rentals not only for the market price right now, but to keep this as a process for us for the future also. We know that it's important to negotiate the rent in every time for the next years also. We work very, very close also the electricity costs. As I know, the electricity cost is the number four expense for our business. We are changing the LED lamps. We are opening store only the LED lamps. We are changing air conditioner, all the air conditioner in the stores also. And in logistics, we hired the Falcone. Falcone is a consultant company here in Brazil that works very, very strong with big companies like Ambev. And Falcone starts to work in our distribution centers to help us to understand how you can be more productivity in this distribution centers. We really believe these agendas can help us in the results for the near future. This together with Dan Humber to understand better the customer behavior in category management, and Dan Humber also help us and try to strengthen in the new loyalty program that you can launch in this year. Now you can go to the question and answer with Eugenie, okay? And myself. Thank you very much.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press the pound key. Our first question comes from Mr. Joseph Giordano from JP Morgan.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Good morning, Eugenio and Marcelo. Thanks for taking my question. I have a few ones. So the first is like the growth, the main surprise of the past results. So I saw that you gained share pretty much all over. So I just wanted to understand if you're seeing like different growth patterns into the different regions. So basically, I'm trying to understand if you're seeing consumers more pressured here or there. And that And if this should be a major decision driver on where you should focus your expansion. And on top of this, if you could comment on the competitive environment on a regional basis, that would be also great. And then my second question would be related to the ongoing discussions related to the new OTC rules in the country. So basically, you would be extending to new pathologies and molecules the right of being sold in the front store. So I just wanted to understand how this should help sales and in driving traffic. Thank you.
Joseph, thanks for the questions. First of all, obviously, I mean, different regions, they have different growth trends. I mean, it's difficult to give a lot of color because our competitors also listen to our conference call and also read your reports. but what I can tell you is that I think São Paulo is delivering healthy growth, and most growth is coming from outside of São Paulo. I think over the last 2 or 3 years, we have seen a huge convergence between our operations. We used to have a bigger gap between São Paulo and the rest, and the rest has been growing in a very, very strong way. And nowadays, we tend to have more similar revenue per store levels across all regions. Obviously, we saw more competitive activity. Some of our competitors who were in deep trouble, they had a breath of fresh air as this price increase helped everybody in the sector and not only us. So in specific markets, we had more promotional activity. And here we think about attacking and defending. So whatever necessary, we defended a position. We tactically reduced our prices wherever needed and at the extent needed. We also strengthened our marketing expenses to focus on some markets where we saw extra opportunities. So we always manage our business as a portfolio, understanding where the opportunities and the threats are and addressing each of them as needed. In terms of our expansion, to deliver 200 stores a year, we don't have much of a luxury of cherry picking. We are opening all over the country. Obviously, São Paulo should be the main block of stores, and I think Northeast should be the second main block of stores. But then we should open more stores in Rio, more stores in the Midwest, more stores in the South. We're looking at new markets. We're just entering Tocantins, as I mentioned, in the end of this month. We're always looking for new markets. So it has to be a combination. Finally, the last question is a very good question, on the OTC switch. Anvisa just passed a new regulation establishing the ground rules for pharmaceutical switch from prescription to OTC. The Brazilian OTC market is a very poor market if you compare to the U.S. and European markets. I mean, a lot of products that in the U.S. or in Europe, they are OTC. In Brazil, they are still prescription products. I mean, I can mention as an example, Nexium, for example. You cannot nowadays find Xenical, also as an OTC, Xenical, as an OTC. In Brazil, it's very limiting, and we haven't seen switches for probably more than 10 years. Now, what Anvisa has determined is that specific categories that have been in the market for more than 5 years, which have a very high safety profile, if one brand within a certain active compound applies for a switch, and the switch is granted, and all other brands of the same active compound will be forced to switch to OTC. This is very good for us, because first of all, we have more margins on OTC than we have in prescription. Prescription is a monopolistic business. OTC is a consumer business. So we have a level playing field when negotiating for suppliers. And second is that switches are generally followed by direct-to-consumer advertising, and this can build demand for these categories and help our overall sales growth. So this is a great trend, but it's very difficult for me to give a grasp on the magnitude of that. We'll have to wait and see.
Perfect. And lastly, like one extra question, if I may. So in the middle of this year, when the new health minister took over, one of the things that he mentioned was like that he would revisit the benefits granted the population, and part of it would be reviewing the popular pharmacy, the Farmacia Popular program. So I just wanted to understand if you have any color on what's going on there, and if it could affect, let's say, like include new pathologies, remove adult diapers. So that would be great. Thank you.
Well, we don't have any specific colors from the new government. Obviously, the government is under a huge budgetary pressure. Farmacia Popular, it's a very meaningful expense. I think Farmacia Popular was over time transformed in a very populistic way. For example, there's a lot of products in Farmacia Popular with zero copay. This doesn't make any sense at all, either economically or in terms of rationalizing usage of products. But it remains to be seen what the government will do. I don't know if the government will cut products, because it's a very sensitive program. Last year we had a major reimbursement hit, just like it happens in the U.S., in Europe. But the thing is, our supply is only 1% of our revenues. So this mega reimbursement cut, in the end of the day, is not that meaningful in our overall numbers. But for the program, it is meaningful. I don't know if the government will do more cuts. If they do more cuts, the number of pharmacies willing to serve to be enrolled in the program will go down, because smaller players cannot afford anymore Farmacia Popular. We can and we'll go on, but others can't. So there's a possibility to see more reimbursement pressures. That could be the case of co-pays being introduced. So we have to see, but obviously the government has to do something about it.
I understand it's a small portion of sales, but can you give us a grasp of how it drives traffic into the store? Or if it's like negligible still?
I mean, frankly speaking, this is a program that everybody has the program. So I don't think the program is attracting much traffic these days. I think one thing is, if we own, let's say if we opt out of Farmacia Popular alone, yes, we lose traffic, because the other guys will be doing it. But let's say if the program ceases to exist, I don't think that's an issue in terms of volume. But we really know that it's a good program, and we want to government to keep this program active right now. Okay, help us, help all the population also. It's good for the customer and bring the customer a little bit for the stores also.
All right, thank you, Eugenio Marcida. Thank you.
As a reminder, to ask a question, please press star 1. Our next question comes from Mr. Luciano Campos from Bradesco.
Good morning, Eugenio. Good morning, Marcílio. Just one question. It's actually one topic here, which is your gross margin, which is, you know, pretty high this quarter because of the effect of the price increase and your ability to, you know, accumulate product with the old cost and sell with the new price. First part of the question is about this, because you have this new distribution center. I would like to understand if your capability of, you know, taking advantage of this strategy in future years, how that changed because of the distribution centers, and if any other thing that affects your ability to take advantage of this strategy. This is the first part of the question. Thank you.
Luciano, so let's talk about the new DC. Opening new DC, adding capacity, it's something that will happen every year. Depending on the market, it will either be a new DC or it will be, let's say, an extension of an existing DC, making it bigger, or a further automation of an existing DC. This is what we're doing in São Paulo. In São Paulo, obviously, we're opening a lot of stores. We have 3 DCs. Doesn't make any sense to have a 4 DC or a 5 DC there. So what we're doing is we're pushing the envelope in terms of the DC's technology, so that the existing DC's can support more and more stores being added. So the result has to be different depending on the situation. In the Northeast, a new DC makes all the sense, because we were very far away from the region. We were shipping from Goiânia, which is very, very far, over very, very bad freeways. We have to rely on wholesalers more than we would like. So having a new DC has, in that region, has a couple impacts. First of all, we improve the reliability of the logistics. We'll be shipping every day to Pernambuco and Paraíba. We'll be shipping 3 days a week to all the other states in the Northeast. So our lead time falls back dramatically. The frequency of shipping and replenishing and the lead time falls back dramatically. So we'll provide a much better service level in those regions, and this should translate in more growth. In the case of the Northeast, for pretty much every state, when you ship from out of state, we have a tax penalty. So in Pernambuco, we will already be able to improve our margins by having DC there. There is a good chance we could do a DC in Bahia next year. Obviously, if you think only logistically, we could wait longer, but Bahia is also a big market for us, and removing this tax disadvantage is also very important. So it's a combination of factors, but I think the first and foremost factor is better service level in the stores.
But, Eugenio, does it help you to take more advantage of, suppose that, I don't know how likely that is, it doesn't matter, you have another nice price increase next year, and you take advantage of, you know, the same strategy that you took advantage this year. Does the change that of the number of CDs and capacity of CDs help you to, you know, meaningfully take more advantage of that same strategy?
I don't know if I fully understood you. You're asking if having more DCs help in forward buying.
Help you take advantage of this strategy of, you know, buying products before the price increase to sell them after.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that's what helps the gross margin in the second quarter of every year.
No, that's absolutely true. We always work with some level of idleness in the system. I mean, that's because of growth, and that's because of opportunity buys like forward buying. So, for example, this year, having a SIFI was very, very important for us. And at some point, we were anxious if the SIFI would be up and running in due time to do it. Because if the opening of the DC derailed by a couple of weeks, the forward buying would have been smaller than it was. So it's definitely important.
Okay, second part of the question, Eugenio, is about, you know, those revenues that you have when you rent part of your shelves or a space for a company, for a pharmaceutical company to advertise their brand, or I just don't know the name in English of that, so that's why I'm explaining it this way. That's also something that the more it is, the better it could be your gross margin. So can you tell us about the prospects of that particular type of revenue, especially now that you are expanding your guidance for openings and you're changing eventually all the things, like, for example, the average size of the new store, that would be an opportunity to have more of those revenues. Can you address specifically the effect of this type of revenues as a potential changer for your gross margin in the future, and taking advantage of the question, any other aspects that you think it would be worthwhile looking at when thinking about your gross margins long term? Thank you.
Luciano, you're talking about trade allowances. Trade allowances are a very important part of our margins. I mean, money that they pay for preferred merchandising, like gondola terminals and displays like that, sometimes also to advertise on tabloid, exclusive offers. So that's an integral part of our margins and a very important part. We don't treat them as a separate component. So every year, in the end of the previous year or the beginning of the year, we sit with all our key suppliers. We give them the reference in terms of what we do in terms of growth, how much we expect to grow. We discuss our margins. We discuss how the margin will be deployed between invoice and trade allowances, what initiatives we have to do together, what opportunities are on the table, what problems we have to fix, and that's an integral part of that. So as we're growing more than we expected, and that's true not only in terms of number of stores, but also in revenues, I mean, naturally, the trade allowances will fall in line. But I wouldn't see that as extra margins. I would see that as maintaining the margins as we grow.
Okay, Eugenio. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Mr. Guilherme Assis from Brasil Plural.
Hi, good afternoon, Eugenio. Thanks for taking my follow-up question. I'd like to discuss a little bit about the run rate of opening 200 stores. I know you delivered that already in the last 12 months, but I remember in the past that when we discussed this, you mentioned that one of the bottlenecks was to find pharmacists and salespeople to fill out the new stores. My question is, how have you assured to deliver this kind of growth in the last 12 months? And what is the plan to be able to circumvent this bottleneck in the next two or in the upcoming years? That's my question. Thank you.
Guilherme, thanks for the question. I mean, first point is the bottleneck is not always the same. I mean, the bottleneck changes from time to time. When you overstretch your growth, generally people become the bottleneck. Sometimes the bottleneck can be financial. Sometimes the bottleneck can be market capacity. Sometimes the bottleneck can be construction capacity. I would think that right now people is not the bottleneck because, first of all, we're talking 200 stores. Over a 1,300 store base, so percentage-wise, we're not talking about anything crazy. And secondly, we have tremendously reduced our employee turnover. So we are retaining more and more candidates for promotion. So right now, obviously, it's something we pay attention and we have always to work to make sure it continues as such. But right now, that's not the bottleneck. We are also increasing the training programs. We are offering new programs. We are using distance learning to do that without increasing costs. So that's not the issue now. I think until now, let's say from the 150 to 200, the issue was construction and legalization. So we have been working with our engineering area to strengthen an area, to improve the processes. Legalization is the same thing. So that was the bottleneck. Before of that, the bottleneck was contracts. So already in 2015, we accelerated our contract signing. So right now, I think everything is falling in place. And obviously, from now on, I think the bottleneck to further increase would be the market capacity to absorb. And if that's the case, I mean, that's an absolute bottleneck. It's one you cannot remove. But we have to get a better understanding of what 200 stores means. So obviously, the number for this year is 200 stores. We're not playing a low number to make it. We're really putting the number we believe. It's the same thing for next year. We're really working for 200 stores. And after 2 years doing that, then I don't know, we'll get to an understanding if we can or if we can't do more. We don't have any idea right now. So I would assume 200 stores going on.
And Guilherme, we invested a lot of money in the last 2 years and to improve your human research department. Okay, we know right now we have the right team to deliver 200 people for 200 stores. Not only people, but good quality people in the stores to keep the same level that you have in stores right now in the stores of the future. Then we know how to hire, how to train, how to prepare, how to promote all the guys to assume all these stores.
Okay, that's clear. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, William.
Thank you.
As a reminder, to ask a question, please press star 1. It appears to be no further questions. Now we will turn the conference back to the company for their final remarks.
Well, thank you all for attending this conference call. I would like to share with you our investor relations schedule for the next month. This is on page 16 of the deck. So we should publish the third quarter results on October 27. We have already defined the schedule also for the Riot Drug Day. It will take place November 25, in the morning here in São Paulo at Hotel Unique, the same place we did last year. We'll have translation, so we would again invite everybody who can come to be here and get to know better the company, get to talk with all our key executives. It's the only time in the year when we bring the whole team and put them at the disposal of investors. So take advantage of that. We have requests over the year that we cannot, we unfortunately cannot attend. So this is the opportunity. Then we have scheduled investor conferences. We have, I think, three conferences in Brazil, August 16, 17, the Santander conference in São Paulo. Then we have August 23rd, the JP Morgan conference in São Paulo, and September 21st, the UBS conference in São Paulo. Then, between September 12 and 14, we'll be in London, Marcelo and myself, for the Morgan Stanley Latin conference. Now, just before letting you go, I mean, just to summarize, I think, what we have seen this quarter and how we're thinking the company going forward. I mean, this was a record quarter in the history of how Drogasil Brasil is a public company. So since Drogasil IPO 2007, we had never posted a double-digit quarter margin. Obviously, there are seasonal effects that we have in every second quarter, and transitory effects also, because this is not a typical second quarter. This is a turbocharged second quarter with a 12% price increase that we won't see it, I think, anytime soon in the future. So, first of all, please remember, in the second quarter last year, the only certainty, the margin will fall. And it will fall for a good reason. It will fall because this year was great. I mean, you can look at the glass half full because this was a great year, or half empty. We look half full. It's good that we have this positive trend this year. We won't have it every year, but it's good when that happens. But in the end of the day, what matters is not the second quarter margin or even the average annual margin. It's the margin at year end on the remaining quarters that it's the starting base for the next year. So that's where you see productivity. So what next year's overall margin, I don't know what will happen. Obviously, we lose margin in the second quarter. Can we find compensation and find the margin? I don't know. It's not easy. There is a great chance that the margin would be in between this year and last year. And if that happens, I mean, that's not a bad thing. It's happening because we have a specific benefit in one quarter and not because of a problem. So the remaining quarters, we should grow the margin. This is what matters. This is how we're measuring the success here. Another point here is that this price increase generated side effects. We had changes in customer behavior that were very clear. And Dunnhumby showed its value. So Dunnhumby allowed us to understand to the last level detail what was happening to the consumer. So this became a more careful and price-sensitive consumer. Not because of the crisis. We still affirm that this is a defensive business, and our numbers, I think, show that. But a 12% price increase makes the customer wonder and look for alternatives. So customers were more price-sensitive, demanded more discounts. Another thing is that some of our competitors who are in a bad financial shape in this crisis, all of a sudden they had a breath of fresh air. We're not the only ones benefiting from this price increase. The whole industry at some level is. Obviously, we do a bigger power buying. We have the capital to that. We have the supply and access to that. But the core inventories are being appraised by everybody. So everybody had, to some level, this kind of gain. So we saw also more commercial activity, more promotional activity by suppliers. And what we did is defend our share. So we did tactical price reductions where and to the extent needed to defend our share. And in some markets, we attacked by increasing our marketing spend, by going on TV, and by sizing the moment. This has to do with our philosophy. our focus here is to create long-term sustainable value. We're not trying to, it's amazing to have a double-digit margin quarter like this. It's amazing to post a record, but in the end, that's not what matters. What matters is the long-term. Everything we do is for the long-term. All the decisions you take, they're not trying to maximize margin now. They're trying to maximize value in the long-term. So when we, very often, we have increasing prices, increasing margin, but when we need to defend, we'll be here and we'll do it. And then we demonstrated that in the quarter. Obviously, we're not talking about anything huge, but obviously we could have had a slightly bigger quarter if not for a bigger market investment and also if not for defending our markets. But we're doing what's right for the long term. So this is the kind of company that you decided to invest, and this is how we think about the business. But again, I mean, structurally, the company is in a very strong shape. We have very robust execution. Our execution has been improving. We are not happy yet. We have many initiatives in place to become even better, to service the customer even better. And we are also seeing a great sales momentum. We had a great quarter, and we are seeing an amazing July as well. So all the structural trends are in place, and we are doing several value-enhancing initiatives to become not only bigger, but also better. So we are on track for a great 2016, and we are already preparing the company for a great 2017, for a great 2018, for a great 2019, for a great 2012, and so on. So again, thank you all for attending the call. Thanks all our long-term investors who have been with us and trusting our execution in the difficult days and also in the beautiful days. This is very important for us. We acknowledge the pressure that you suffered in the past during the merger. Life is not a straight line. I mean, life is more sinuous, so we have slightly better quarters, sometimes slightly tougher quarters, but be sure that we are walking. Actually, we are running in the right direction, the right pace. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Hiya Drogasil conference call has come to an end. Thank you for your participation. Have a nice day.